Hey guys, welcome to Hope It Helps. Today's guest is Hussein Wehbe. Hussein is the founder and CEO of Plug MENA and Sales Middle East. He brings over 23 years of experience working in both the public and private sector and was the former government advisor to the Prime Minister's office. In addition, he's a TEDx speaker and sales expert focused on making an impact and sits on the board of multiple organizations to help them build teams and grow their business. During this episode, we discuss the power of having a can-do mindset. We talk about the differences between becoming an entrepreneur and working in the corporate world, learning to focus on what really matters, and the characteristics of a true leader. And the last message he wanted to share is, the world is small, but there are a lot of opportunities around you. You just have to find them. Please join me in welcoming to the show, Mr. Hussein Wehbe.
Thank you, Khaled. Very pleased to be with you on the show.
Thank you so much for your time, man. I really appreciate it. So Hussein, we were talking just now, you know, off camera about, you know, how kind of we got connected and the work that you're doing. So guys, Hussein has a crazy story. He's been involved in probably everything. You know, he's been in the corporate world for over 22 years. He's now leads multiple of his own companies. He's also the board of many companies. So he's got Plug MENA, which is a logistic advisory services company. And then he, out of that, I'm guessing the sales Middle East got built because it's a platform that's helping people conduct like supply chain and logistics and so on. So it kind of like, it made sense how you opened that other one. Today, Hussein, what I wanted to talk to you about is kind of your career, entrepreneurship as a whole. You know, you're someone who has very unique experiences. You have a lot of experience in the corporate world, but you've dabbled in and out with like entrepreneurship, and now you're kind of in that as well. So I'd love to hear, you know, your experience in that transition. How did it feel? But before we get into everything, Hussein, why don't you give all of us a little bit of background about yourself, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, thank you, Khaled. I think this will be an interesting podcast. I'm going to speak about things that many people already know, but it's always good to remind people of the greatness of having a mix always between corporate and entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
I worked in the corporate for around 22 years. Great learnings, excellent knowledge. And I think everybody today, I tell everybody, the corporate is the right base to strengthen your bones.
To strengthen your bones.
Of course. I mean, every fresh graduate should come into the corporate, take experience, and grow. The question is, corporate or entrepreneurship? We will discuss this during the episode.
Absolutely.
But yes, I worked for 22 years in multinationals. I had the pleasure and to lead big organizations. And it wasn't really a tough mission. I can tell you it was a very exciting mission. And then I decided a couple of years back to try, to tickle entrepreneurship, because I saw a lot of people going that path.
Sure, sure.
It's good to try it without closing your doors on coming back to corporate. So I opened my company, Plug MENA. Plug MENA came as an idea because I saw that there's a lot of great consultancy firms and advisory firms, but clients need more execution.
Execution.
Yes, so and practical execution. So I said, why don't I try to change this a little bit by introducing this concept in the region where Plug MENA is a partner who plugs itself with clients to help them in different areas. Focus of Plug MENA is on logistics, supply chain, e-commerce, delivery, because this is where the future is today. Okay. Of course, it's not limited to that. It can be more of restructuring and everything.
Sure, sure.
And Sales Middle East, just to correct you, it was created 2 months back. I saw a very big gap in sales in the region.
In sales?
Very big gap. Okay. I'm a salesperson. I started as
a
salesperson.
I can tell, by the way. I can tell.
I mean, I can sell you the moon, but of course, when I sell you the moon, I sell you the real moon.
The good one.
The big one. And I found that many companies today struggle in finding the right salespeople, hiring them.
Yeah.
And hiring is only maybe a fraction of the services. Mm. Training them, coaching them in the field, helping them to get business, opening your network to connect them to clients, lead generation, actual lead generation, going with those people to the visits and coaching them in the field to upskill them and uplift their skills is something that nobody is doing. Mm. So this is the mission of Sales Middle East today. It really can serve all industries. And sure. I believe there is a big gap. And this is where I can start. I started to see a lot of demand on these services.
It's very interesting that that's the gap that you that you saw in the market from a sales perspective, but I get what you mean in the sense that a lot of sales training is very, I think sometimes it's not very real world based. It's too situational and it doesn't take into account the nuances of like this kind of conversation or like the body language and this. And there's so many things that go into that. I wanted to circle back to your mindset, the can-do mindset and the why not mindset. It seems that I listened to your TED talk and it seems that those two things have been very, those two aspects have been very, very key to your success. Obviously, with every entrepreneur, with every dream, with everything you're building, you always have a lot of optimism and positivity, kind of like what your mindset kind of is. And then life comes and gives you one nice slap to be like, oh, okay, I need to maybe not, I'm not changing anything, but I might need to recalibrate. So could you tell us about the moment that you realized or the situation that you realized you're like, okay, I still do believe this mindset, but I need to change or recalibrate how I use it.
Look, mindset is super important because it is the driver of all your actions, no matter what you do. So in my TED talk, and I created my TED talk based on raw experience. I was super excited when I was delivering that. And yes, it was everything that I've done in my life was due to my positive mindset. Okay, the can-do mindset. Whatever I cannot do is literally whatever cannot be done.
Okay.
Logically. Mm. So here, this is where common sense comes.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot fly. I will not think of flying. So I will not overpromise myself. But I think the can-do mindset sometimes can be very exhausting.
Exhausting?
Because you will keep trying because you know that this can be done, but it needs a lot of efforts. Mm. And the circumstances around you will not allow you to reach what you are trying. I'll be honest with you.
Please.
I have partnered with companies as an advisor and reached brands, and those brands, I'm not going to mention them because you will tell me you will charge me for an advertisement, but I value them. These are my partners. I had dreams of being an advisor for them.
Okay.
Okay. And I ended up with three of them advising them or working with them somehow.
Sure.
Because I said, I can do it. How much effort I have put in that, honestly, 50%. Okay. But the other 50% was luck. So maybe my mindset here brought me luck, I don't know. We're not going to talk about now being a gypsy person, but it happened. So sure. This gave me more power to keep on working myself. I'm a human like everybody. You see me on LinkedIn every day, very positive, but I have my down times as well.
Absolutely.
And during those down times, nothing pulls me up other than, you know what, Hussein, you can do it. So it is important.
Yeah.
It's exhausting. You should not only depend on it 100% because it can take you into a lot of dreams that may not be fulfilled. And the moment you don't fulfill it, you will go down again.
Exactly.
So balance between being realistic, because sometimes, sorry, you can do it, but something is going to stop you from doing it. So you quit and you do something else.
Yeah. I think you said something super important there that, you know, realizing when is it time to pull the plug and move on. I think, you know, speaking for myself, even for like my podcast or whatever, they always say don't have an emotional attachment to like your business and stuff. And I've seen entrepreneurs and even myself, I'm like, when I think about someone coming into like this space, I'm like very protective, very, you know, whatever, which is probably not the healthiest or the right thing to do. But how did you, I guess the question then becomes, because you have on one side of your mind, you're like, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this. And then there's reality of what can and cannot be done. How did you, like, how do you know? And you said a very key thing, circumstances in your around you may not allow you the time or the ability to get to the stage that you're trying to get to move on. So what, like, how as an entrepreneur, do I know, or should I know, what advice would you give me on knowing when is it time to unfortunately pull the plug on this?
You should pull the plug when your financial situation is not improving. Because in the end, it's business.
Absolutely.
Okay, entrepreneurship, okay, it gets sold as a beautiful thing. You own your own time. You're the CEO of yourself. You wake up whenever you want. This is good, but you work 24/7. I mean, I work 24/7, literally. Mm. Not because I want to, because I have to. Pulling the plug is okay. I mean, you can do entrepreneurship for a few years. This will strengthen your capabilities as a business person. Even if you left the corporate, you did 2 or 3 years entrepreneurship, your resilience was multiplied by 10. So the moment you see that your financial situation is not improving, don't shut down your business. I always say it. Keep your businesses and go back to corporate. I mean, as I told you during our chat, people ask me, does this mean, Hussein, I'm out of corporate? No, I'm not out of corporate. I'm still open for corporate. I'm still being approached. If the right opportunity comes to me as an executive who goes to a corporate, because I miss leading people, lead an organization while having my side business on the side being handled by somebody without a conflict of interest, why not?
Sure.
This is something very important people should say, because I know entrepreneurs who quit corporate. They went into entrepreneurship. They failed, and it's okay to fail. We learn from our failures. And they are shy to go back to corporate. No, you are not a failure. You are just a person who tried to experiment something. You gained more resilience from your failure.
Yeah.
Or from the slowness of your business. It doesn't mean that you are failing. Go back to corporate. Have a stable income. Contribute to the corporate again, but keep your side business on the side on a very slow cooker, I say. You can cook it slowly until you're fully ready.
So like,
By the way, you may not be fully ready. You may enjoy staying in the corporate while having somebody who manages your business as a passive income. So this is my advice today. 10 years back, we used to say, khalas, leave and go. No. The reasons of leaving, I'm sure you will discuss them.
Yeah, exactly. Because you mentioned it off camera, and you just mentioned it now, how the difference between working in the corporate and working and being an entrepreneur, and how you mentioned like how a lot of entrepreneurs would be feel bad to like have to go back to that world and so on. And when you're saying that, I can put my hand up and say like I would be honestly probably be one of those guys. Which that's why I'm terrified every day. I'm like, I don't want to go back to that. But you mentioned something about like that corporate will strengthen your bones. It will strengthen your foundation. You worked in the corporate world for 22 years, both in public and private sector. And I'm sure all of that experience, priceless experience, has been instrumental in helping you build and be successful in what you're doing right now. But obviously, there's many, just as there's many corporates, as many entrepreneurs that start from the beginning. You see them, those 18, 19-year-old guys, the young ones that just start and build, and they try and they fail. They don't go to the corporate world and so on. So because I think my two cents, I would love to hear what you think. I think if you're going to take the entrepreneurial path, what you learn there compared to what you would learn if you just went into a corporate, like in the corporate world into a job, I think the two learnings are completely different. Like as an entrepreneur, you will be exposed to so many things that you'll need to address just as a person in order to build yourself as a person and as a business.
I still insist that you should start in the corporate. Many, many graduates, they start directly in entrepreneurship for one reason. And let's be realistic. They have money. Okay. So especially if their parents are rich, which is good. I mean, their parents will inject money in a company set up and they tell them it's a trial and error. All right. They can succeed, but the percentage of success is very low because those founders, they don't have the basics of business. Today, one of the things I do is, let's say, for example, I do training for undergraduates and universities sometimes to get them ready for business. But irrespective of how much you train them, they will never be ready to lead a business. Their soft skills are not enough initially. They don't have the real base. And this is why it's okay to start. The beautiful thing in the Gulf countries, and you see it in family businesses, local family business, most of them, and I've worked with many of them when I was in the government as well, they come from the top family businesses. They start from scratch. They start as consultants, analysts in the government. They don't aim high. And their parents, who are maybe millionaires and the builders of the business, insist to put them there so that they will learn. So you see them going into, let's say, government entities, working for 2-3 years, understanding the business world, and then they come back to their family business, not as a CEO, maybe on a director level, to start learning the family business and then grow. And this is excellent. This is, I think, how it should be. You have university graduates who go to the big fours a lot in this region.
Typically,
they go and they start there. This is excellent. Because again, they will build their base, and later on they can start of thinking to go into a solo situation, which should be at least not before 5 or 6 years. Again, the world changed. Maybe before I could have told you a different advice, but today the world is becoming very tough. Jobs are not available like before. So it's good to start with a corporate and then start thinking of your own business.
You know what? That's I think that's fair. Given my so I worked in corporate and in startups for a couple of years when I was living in Amsterdam. And so I got the corporate experience and I got the startup experience. Sometimes I think, you know, with everything I'm doing, I'm like, am I ready for this? Do I need more time? You know, you get these thoughts sometimes as you're figuring out, go I left, do I go right? I don't know. But I think when it comes to building yourself as a person, like you said, the corporate world strengthens your bones. It gives you structure on like what is a business, what's important in a business, the numbers, you know, all these kind of things. Now, if you went back and looking at the last 22 years from when you started to, you know, where you are right now, you said the world has changed a lot and the demand for jobs is changing. So in your, from your perspective, I'd love to hear, what do you see the next like 5-10 years of this whole, like the job market kind of, you know, look like? Because like you said, it's changing every single day.
To tell you, I'm worried. I don't want to scare you. But from whatever I've been seeing recently, there's a very big supply of great talents who are looking for jobs. And unfortunately, many companies are not seeing those talents. They are just treating them as another CV paper that comes to their email and they don't even look at it. Although I know them personally, and I know that these people are plug and play people with a guarantee of 20 years from my side. So if this continues like this, while having big organizations shrinking down and downsizing, because you see a lot of them today, the job market is going to be much tougher. But here, it doesn't mean that we raise the white flag. This is where, if you are somebody who comes from corporate and you're jobless, instead of sitting doing nothing every day, and many of maybe our colleagues who are watching this episode will stamp that I have met them and sat with them and I told them, instead of just applying to jobs every day, go now immediately, buy a website, choose a name, create a business, make the logo, and try it. It may work until you find another job. So it's good today for everyone, if your situation allows, to open your own business and try wherever your passion can be offloaded to be monetized.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the future is for the small and the medium, I'm telling you, not for the big giants anymore. Big giants are shrinking, the small and medium are growing.
Yeah, exactly.
And they are disrupting the big players. So if you are working with a big brand, it doesn't mean you're going to stay there forever. It means that your days maybe are limited. It can be a year, it can be 10 years.
Yeah.
But in the end, you will have to be having a plan B.
Yeah.
Always, I say, have a plan B.
Have a plan. You know, because I know, so COVID for you was kind of, I think for everyone was kind of that, like, you know, the world like just paused. And we had to all sit and think like, what are we supposed to do? So I thought it was very interesting, how you put a poll on your profile to ask people, should I go back to corporate? Should I not? And 70% said, you know, go be an entrepreneur. So you went and did it. My question to you is, because I've like read a lot of books and they talk about how, you know, using your network, whatever, getting feedback, you know, like which post do you like, this one or this one, you know, just testing things like that. My question then becomes, in your case, it works because you already had built, you know, mashallah, you had a good following and a good audience. So the reaction was from the amount of people, you can be like, okay, that's a good sample size, you know, to go do this decision. But what advice do you have, I guess, to the people who don't have, you know, the kind of audience that you do? How would they figure out, is this something that I should pursue? Is this something that I should not pursue? Do you understand what I mean? Because I feel it can be a bit challenging sometimes.
First of all, let me tell you thank you, because you've done a good research. I mean, reaching this poll, it means you've scrolled on my LinkedIn profile for hours.
Yeah.
Purposely, I did that. I didn't want really somebody to decide on my behalf, but I wanted people's opinion, because in the end, those people will be my clients. They will be the people who will support me. So I did a poll And I, because at that time I was having a lot of executive jobs, very good ones coming to me. And I didn't want to say no, but I was having, again, the tickle of entrepreneurship. So I said, let me try it. So I did the poll. Should I go back to corporate or should I open my own business? Okay. The results came, do your own business, which gave me trust that people trust me.
Okay.
And they want to work with me. And the funny thing is, I always say this, I plan to take all the ones who voted for me to go and open my own business to take screenshots of their names and then approach them one by one and tell them, yalla, I have opened my own business. Fadal, give me business. I'm a sales guy, you know.
The sales is sales, you know.
And I didn't do it till today, by the way. I didn't have time to do it.
Mm-mm.
But I mean, will I do this again now since I think, okay, why not? Going back to corporate is a great thing. No, but look, again, this poll is very, very, very emotional for me because the moment people contributed in that, it means they care.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in the end, the decision was mine, and I was influenced by people because this is where they see me.
Exactly.
All right.
They see you as someone who's running his own business.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
So yes, it's good always. People who don't have audience, I will not go and tell you like everybody else unrealistically. Follow your gut feeling. Yeah, Habibi, there's nothing on gut feeling. Gut feeling is not there. I think you need to ask some mentors and people.
Yeah,
you need to really get advice before taking a decision. If you are financially capable to take the risk, take it. So let's say, try it for a year, it's okay.
Yeah.
If not, then at least during those days, don't do it unless you are sure that you have the right funding, the right backup, and the right business which is needed in the market. You just cannot copy any business and say, I want to be like this name. So that's really my advice if you don't have a LinkedIn audience to give you the advice.
No, but that's very important because I think a lot of people don't start businesses or don't take that leap because of what you just said, you know, the fear or the financial resources and so on. I was talking to my dad and we were kind of talking about what you're saying, how the job market is changing and so on. And I read reports that in the future of work is like hybrid. So like, for example, maybe a corporate job and a little thing on the side, you know, that, you know, you run yourself. So now it's very interesting. So now we're in probably the most competitive time to get a job and to make money. And it's also, ironically, probably in the history of life, the easiest time to make money and to grow your business, because now you have access to ChatGPT and AI and all these incredibly powerful tools. You can have businesses running with AI and you can go to sleep and they'll take care of everything for you. So my philosophy is like, now we've entered this new arena. The people that will win in this new world are the ones who can use AI the most effectively. That's my opinion, because the tools are there for everyone to use. So it's going to come down to who can use it the best. That's my two cents. What do you think?
I have a mixed opinion here.
Okay.
AI is a great tool. It's a great technology to facilitate and enable you, not to make you a cheater. So today, and my clients know this very well, and I tell them, you can go and check. If I ever create content for anything I'm working with you, based on AI, which means AI have created that and I will only deliver it, don't work with me.
Yeah.
I would rather use AI to help me in structuring my content for my business, be it a training, be it a course, be it a proposal, to save me time, rather than doing manually. Instead of an Excel sheet, I can go maybe to AI and do it in one click.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It can help me to get insights in research. Rather than, you know, going and Googling everything, AI can provide me this and then I can put, okay, it's okay. So we have to be very careful in using AI because it's a trust issue. In the end, if people want to work with me or you as an advisor, they want our experience and knowledge, not AI's knowledge, not ChatGPT.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they will pay for ChatGPT as a consultancy fee. So I always advise people, use it wisely, but don't. Many people maybe use it today on LinkedIn to put a post.
Yeah. You see it because the amount of content some people are posting is not normal.
This is not thought leadership. I mean, you cannot say I'm a thought leader. Mm-mm. If AI generates content, you copy it and paste it on LinkedIn and get engagements, because this is not you. You have to be authentic. So AI is a great enabler for authentic people when it comes to social media. AI is a great time saver and a facilitator for you as a business person.
Yeah. You mentioned, you said something very, very key there, that AI is there to help you, but you don't, you shouldn't become a cheater. And sometimes it can be very tempting, you know, to like go use it for certain things. I think what we, I think naturally as humans, our problem is we are default lazy. We want convenience. We want the easiest way to do it. So if this thing can do it for me in 1 second, there's a good chance I'm going to use it. But looking at the statistics, what's interesting, analyzing social media content, is the one, like a post that you, let's say you made a post and I made exactly the same post about the same thing, but I used AI and you didn't. You get, I think, 30-40% higher engagement because people can, you know, people can tell when you're being authentic, when you're not. I want to take you back a little bit to your story was very inspiring to me in the sense that you were a dreamer from a young age. You always wanted, you know, to do your own thing, and how you started with Aramex, and from day one you were, you know, packing just packing boxes, you know, get to work, you know, starting from there. And for you to have, I remember that you described me at the time, the humility to be like, fuck it, okay, this is the job, this is what I got to do. And your dream was to become a manager. And then your dream was to become a CEO. So my question is, how did it feel when you finally hit that CEO mark for the first time?
Look, it was a great feeling, but for me, it was never about the title of a CEO. It was the power of a CEO.
Of course, yes, of course.
So when I started with Aramex as a very junior person, again, yes, all of us started, the old generation in packing boxes and doing the coding for the aerobills and routing shipments and everything. But this is how you learn to start from scratch.
Yeah.
And yes, I was ambitious. And honestly, my hard work and the great leadership I had at that time helped me in growing in the organization, where I reached a manager level and then a director level and maybe a CEO level. It all came without me going and knocking the door and saying, I want to be promoted. And this is something I'm very happy and proud in my career. I never went and said, oh, if you don't promote me, I will leave. No, it always came by default because my leadership saw me. And you know what? The secret was not only the leadership, believe it or not. 80% of the reason I was able to climb the ladder in Aramex in specific was the people. The people themselves, they will elevate you on their shoulders because they believe in you. And they are the ones who indirectly put pressure on the management to say, we want this person as our leader, without saying anything.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a vibe that happens.
Yeah, yeah.
And many times I remember still rumors. People create rumors.
Oh, really?
Let's say, for example, if a CEO role was open in the company, or a GM role, or a country manager, people will start creating rumors, it's Hussein, and then I don't know about it. And they come and tell you. Sometimes those positive rumors are indirect ambitions of people. They want you to take that role, and it happens. And by the way, it happened a couple of times.
No way, yes. Really?
So this is the beauty of working in organizations where the people who you work with below you believe in you, and that's how they elevate you. And then it reaches the management level or the senior level where they say, you know, this guy is due to be promoted because people want him or her to really lead them.
Yeah. And I think you touched on such an important thing there, Hussein, in the sense that talking about people. So I've been reading a book right now called Good to Great by Jim Collins. It's, guys, shout out, please go read it. It's incredible. And they talk about, you know, hiring and hiring the right people. You know, they say, oh, your business is your people. The book says, based on research, it's not the people, it's the right people. Now, you've been in the corporate world for 22 years, and I'm sure you've gone through or done some hiring, you know, at some point. I want to understand from you, from your perspective. Let's say I'm sitting in an interview, I'm with you, Hussein, okay. What are the characteristics that would make me a good candidate, you know, to join? What would you be looking for? What would make me the right person?
Khaled, I'm very proud to say that I have hired maybe hundreds of people across my career, and 98% of them somehow never disappointed me. I always go into the very easy way of hiring people. I look first at the soft skills. When I see you, I analyze you quickly in the first 2-3 minutes to see your character and attitude, because this is what really matters today, and your willingness to learn as well. If you come to me as an expert and start just selling yourself, you will switch me off from the first 2 minutes.
Okay.
The willingness to learn. I don't want you to know everything. Your soft skills. You are a positive person. You can work in a team. You can perform. Just by a bit of learnings and trainings, you will be perfect. This is how I always hired people. I used to have sometimes debates with HRs when I try to cut down the hiring process in the corporate. So I had no need for 5 or 6 interviews and committees, because many times people will reject a very great candidate because they think, I feel this person is not suitable for the job. So, and sometimes a lot of exams that we do are not required. I mean, English exam for somebody who is already speaking English, for example, doesn't work.
Yeah.
Psychometric is important, but let's make it simple. In the end, you are not taking a risk. I always say this when you hire an experienced person. It's not a risk at all. It's an investment. You may need to pay more to train him or her, but in the end, there is no human who will come in and do nothing or fail you. I mean, I've never seen people like that.
Yeah.
You're 1 out of 100.
Yeah.
So this is what I really look at. Proudly, even with my clients sometimes, and I've hired recently for one of my clients, around 6 or 7 people. The client thanked me for those. 7 people are top performers. Why? Because I know those people, how they performed in the region, in the industry, or wherever it is. And I say, you know what? You hire that person, I'm responsible for his or her performance. I know that they are plug and play, and there's a zero risk here. Even if they are not from the industry, we will train them to perform.
Yeah. And talking about, people and hiring people and working, you've worked in many different industries across, across your career. And one thing that, you said something very interesting that it sounds counterintuitive to everything I've read. So that's why I wanted to ask you about it. You're like, you put yourself into a lot of different things, but with focus. And I'm like, okay, my understanding of focus and from what I've read is I should be eliminating everything, not looking to the left, not looking to the right, putting, those horse blinders on and just like looking straight. So my question to you is, do you feel from your personality, I can see right off the bat why you do it. You are that kind of person that wants to, build with people and be successful and stuff. So I get why you do it. But I'm curious, if you reflect now, do you feel that has, if you just stayed maybe in like one area instead of going into 5, do you think you would have been further along, or you're happy that the 5 that you did have given you a certain perspective that you probably couldn't get over here?
Again, there is always different perspectives on this.
Yeah.
It's very important to focus. And I'm a person who really focuses. But I focus on what really matters. If what really matters is scattered across 3 or 4 areas, I will focus on the 4.
Okay.
If I am a corporate guy today, I will focus, of course, on my business and the company I'm representing. But even within the organization itself, I will have to focus on different things. Be it the service levels, be it the commercials, be it the numbers, be it the positioning, the strategy, everything. When you are on your own and you have passion and adding value to others, sometimes you will be more scattered. As we say, you are the jack of all trades.
Yes.
And I wrote about this recently. Yes, I am a jack of all trades because I have different things that interest me. So I try different things with my clients. So when I go to a customer today or a big organization, and I have a couple of cards in my pocket, which I present my clients.
Sure.
I try to sell different solutions, for example, which is okay because you will find one of the needs will be in my pocket somehow.
Yeah.
So exactly, this is how I do it. It's not a matter of I'm working, let's say, in technology, in logistics, in startups. No. I don't do that. Many industries I don't approach, and I get approached a lot by clients from overseas to come here, set up their business, saying we want you to represent us in the region. I don't understand your industry. So I don't throw myself into another bucket of
maybe
lack of focus direction. No, yeah. I focus again, as I told you, on whatever matters. And it's working. I mean, it's working. It never affects my focus on key things that I have to deliver. It keeps me more excited, in fact.
Yeah. So it's very interesting that you said that you focus, you're not actively seeking out, all these different things, but you're being approached, companies have certain problems, and that problem might be split across many different areas that you're going to have to like dive into and get into. And I know you sit on the board of many companies, as well. So Being on the board is something that I would love to hear from you what that means, because I think people, or maybe it's just me, I don't understand what the, like, I understand why the board is there. It's like the final check after the CEO, if, you know, if needed. But my question to you is actually a couple, like, how do you decide which companies to be on the board of? What does that look like in terms of like your role? What do you have to do? And how has that, I guess, affected, you know, your career and what you're doing?
Yeah, that's a good question, Khaled. I have redefined the word of sitting on the board myself by calling it standing on a board.
Standing on a board.
So I don't care about a board seat. I would rather stand up and contribute around the table of a board rather than sitting once in a year or twice in a year just to speak. So I believe boards today need to be changed. The board structures need to be changed to have active board members in a proper governance structure. Governance is number one when it comes to boards and companies. But I think people like us who come from different industries, we love to sit on boards, not because of the title, not because of you want to put it as a board member on your title. It's much more of you want to contribute to the organization.
Yeah.
Of course, it comes with its benefits for you, which is natural. But again, me personally, as a board member in a couple of organizations, be it advisory or executive board, non-executive board member, is to contribute and help the CEO and the team on the ground in achieving the mission of the company so that this will escalate up to the board later and showing that, you know what, we are here as a board or board members, not only to question you, our role is to question you as a CEO, but also we are supporting you as well.
Yeah.
This gives the CEO 10 times more power.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
A motive to perform and deliver. And this really needs to be changed. I mean, I always tell, I never put myself any limit to sit on any board, as long as the board allows me to be an active board member, to contribute on the ground rather than just sitting and asking questions during a one time or two time per year session.
Yeah, I think that's very refreshing to hear. It's the first time I've heard about, you know, a board being more active, but listening to you explain, it makes so much sense. Like, if I'm joining a board of a company, it's in my interest for this to go well, because this is going to also, you know, this is also going to help me. So, and being active on it and having the ability to influence and the power to make decisions and, you know, be on the ground is something very important to you. And it's something that I think, it sounds like if you feel like you can't, you don't have the resources, but like the freedom to make the choices that you think you need to make for the business, you wouldn't probably join that board. Would that be fair to say?
Exactly. 100%.
Yeah. 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 And you said something, and this is so this is an interesting one. So you said the moment you stop caring about people, the moment you stop caring about what other people think, you'll be unstoppable. And I 100% agree. Now, let me give you this. So my background is in sales. So, I sat for 3 years. All I did was sit and pick up the fucking phone. And every day, 3 hours, hi, this is Khaled. Hi, this is Khaled. Well, get out of here. Well, fuck you. You become bulletproof. You know, anyone in sales, you build like a bulletproof, whatever. However, what I've noticed is I feel that element, that like bulletproofness, is like a muscle. And when you're not actively working on it, that that muscle starts to get weaker and weaker, and it allows doubt to start coming in, and it allows, being self-conscious and so on. So what my question to you is, do you feel that to build that resilience and to keep that resilience is something you have to always actively be working on?
Definitely. I spoke about this a lot, and I still speak about it, and I will always speak about it. If you are there to worry about what others think about you, you will never achieve anything, because you will never be able to please everyone. They always say you're not selling ice cream, which is correct. You have to be working to add value. You will have haters, you will have supporters. At the moment you stop feeding people, as I always say, is your optimal or the royalty level that you reach in your life. Because when you don't fear anyone, no matter who he or she is, you will have the courage to approach them for business, for partnership, for anything. And this is where your your attitude and character will change, and you will not live in the fear of rejection, although you have to always accept rejection. I mean, even myself, with all my network and connections, I get rejected by a lot of businesses that, you know, saying, we don't need now your services, which is fine. I take it very positively. So yes, you have to be bulletproof in accepting rejection because it's part of life.
Yeah.
But don't take it personal.
You said it perfectly, and I think this is the biggest number one challenge for everyone.
Don't take it personal, because always manage your own expectations.
When
you want to manage your own expectations, when you are in business, the way to really reduce the possibilities of getting rejected, and this is a sales tip I always use, increase your leads or approaches. So if you're selling a product or a service or an offering, reach out to 50. Okay, you'll have maybe 48 who will reject, but two will click. Those two who will click will give you that fresh air to breathe. Wow, it's working.
Mm.
But if you send one email to one client, or you approach and visit and meet one client, and that client tells you no, without increasing your reach, it will take you down.
Absolutely.
It's very normal, you know. You were in sales and you know very much.
I know very well. Yeah, absolutely. And especially I feel in entrepreneurship that what you're talking about, these little wins are like gold, because 90% of the time, for example, even in my case, like 90% of the time I'm like working and trying to get clients and whatever, and then I get that client, so I got that 10%. I'm so happy for like a moment, and then it's like, all right, where's the next one? You know, it's an endless process. But
and it's okay always to chase the client in a professional manner without harassing them.
Okay,
following up. I mean, I always tell my clients, if you're not interested, just tell me we're not interested. I close the case. But don't go silent. Don't go cricket sounds. Just tell me I'm not interested. Look, there is a challenging part of it here, where sometimes you get a lot of people also approaching you to sell you something, but whatever they're selling you is not relevant to your business.
Mm.
So you don't have the time to reply to them as well. And that's a different story.
Sure.
Which is, the salesperson didn't do his or her job properly by just approaching everybody randomly, spamming them, and this doesn't work.
Yeah. And you know what kills me, especially since I was in sales, like when I get all these LinkedIn emails and things about... Yani stuff, if I'm the target market and you're sending me an email, عيني وراسي, like I'm like, good, you did a good job, I'm your target market. But when you're sending me stuff about, oh, you wanna like ships and this, I'm like, and who am I? Do you see me? I'm a podcaster, bro. I'm sitting right here. There's nothing.
Exactly.
I have no relevance to you. Coming back a little bit, I wanted to touch on your experience in the public sector, because you said that really, really taught you a lot. So first, I want to start with this. You've worked in private, you've worked in public, and you've worked as an entrepreneur. What did you learn in public that you could have never, ever learned in private?
One thing. In public, and I've said this a lot, I never went to work.
You never went to work?
I went to a place where I felt I'm contributing to the community and a society which embraced me from day one as an expat, by adding value to that, to the community, through working with the government around government services and improving things in the government. So it made me forever a public servant.
Okay.
Today, even I exited the government, my heart and soul and DNA are still in the government as a public servant.
Mm.
So anything I do today in the private sector, be it for clients or alone, I want to create impact in the community.
Yeah.
Maybe I've tried this in the UAE and it was successful. This is what I'm trying to do today in Saudi Arabia and other countries, by going and trying to work with governments as well to improve things on the ground through the private sector. And this is where I still remember my great boss, the government, His Excellency, told me when I resigned, and this is what made me today tell you this. He told me, Hussein, we are not happy that we lost you, although he gave me the blessing to go back to corporate.
Sure, sure.
Because he saw the value. He said, under one condition, you are not leaving us. You are going to be our ambassador in the private sector. imagine this.
Wow.
How big this sentence is to keep me always dedicated to, in everything I do, I want to see the organizations in the private sector doing some impact on the community, in the nation, which really gave us the chance to work here.
Yeah. And it makes so much sense now, listening to you and reflecting on our conversation, why working in government has a special place in your heart, because your whole personality is just, I want to make an impact in every single thing I do. And probably government, you're not going to, there's nowhere to make a bigger impact than changing something in the government, changing a policy. And obviously the big problem we all hear is the disconnect between the public and the private. So having an ambassador like yourself who has is very experienced in both worlds, you're the perfect bridge. You're the perfect bridge to bring those two things.
I wish somebody comes and creates a role called Chief Bridging Officer.
I will take it. Yeah,
I will leave everything at the Chief Bridging Officer between government and private.
Yes.
And this is very much needed, by the way.
That's a new business.
Yeah,
that could be a new business. You know, that could be the connection between the two.
Exactly.
You never know. Leadership. Okay, first, I'm going to start with this. From your perspective, in your definition, define a leader for me.
A leader is a person who comes and gets the best out of you through inspiration and never through power. So a person who will lead you is a person who will drive you to perform in a very empathetic and supportive way, rather than putting his or her force on you. That's how I've learned this, maybe sometimes the hard way, because sometimes people will abuse. So leadership is not an authority, it is an inspiration. This is how I can summarize
it. Oh, I love that.
Yes.
I love that. Because yes. I think that's the biggest problem that we have as a society, as a misconception with leadership. We think, you know, once you're at the top, my job is to, you know, sit and everyone do the work, you know, like the rest of the work for me and so on. But it's from everything I've read, the studies, the books, whatever, it tells you, like, as a manager, your job, or even the CEO of a company, your job is to be a servant to your people. Your job is to help them get what they need. So I love what you said. It's not about authority. It's about actually helping people. And in your career, you worked in many organizations. You've managed companies ranging in size. I was thinking, I'm like, does the size of the company affect your leadership style? Or does it mean you have to recalibrate it depending on, you know, the size or how you've entered into this project?
In my opinion, no.
No.
If you give me a company today with 1 million people or with 5 people, if I want to really apply my leadership skills, I can do it. And let me tell you how. I'm not the only leader in the organization. My role is to create a layer of leaders below me who cascade down the proper leadership style, as long as my leadership style is really endorsed and approved by everybody.
Yeah.
So if people like my leadership style, I cannot reach, let's say, the biggest operation I led was, I had around 4,500 people in the region.
Wow,
okay?
Mashallah.
I never had the chance to know all of them. Okay.
I'm sure.
But at least I was trying to create a layer of leaders below me, or a couple of layers, who will cascade down my leadership vision, and they have the right attitude and skills to do that, because their success was my success. And I never came and said, I'm the one who created success. I created success through those people.
Exactly.
And this is where magic happens. Yeah. And believe me, today as we speak, many of those leaders are senior leaders, be it in the same organizations or they left somewhere else. And what makes you feel proud is they always fly around you and come and tell you, Hussein, you helped us, to craft our leadership.
Yeah.
So yes, you can lead a 1 million people company, but set a proper leadership layer.
Sure.
And then when this happens, you set the values, I call them the shared values, that should be adopted by everybody.
Exactly.
And these shared values are very simple. You know, you can create 5 or 6 values. No toxicity, no, whatever it is, you will have the best performing company ever.
Yeah. And it's so funny you said that, because in the book I was reading, they echo those things and they say you should be super, like super critical about your the people in your key positions, like you said, because those are the guys that you're going to lead, and they're the ones that are going to lead the rest of the organization or the rest of the division or so on. So putting in the right team to make that happen not only makes your life easier, it makes everything run a lot smoother.
Yeah. And one of the things I love in corporate, I mean, any corporate job I get or I will get, the beautiful thing is building a team. That's the most exciting part of it, is to build a team. So you say, you know what? I need five people, the C-level VP director. And names start to come to your mind from people whom you worked with in the past.
Yeah.
Or people whom you know in the in the in the field or in the industry or in the community, and are the right people. The best part is when you take the WhatsApp or the phone and call them and say, hey, let's say I joined this company and I want you to come and join my team. Are you available? The yes here makes you jump, you know, because building a team is, I mean, maybe I'm strange enough to tell you that this is the best part of leading an organization. And the moment you do that and you set everything in place, trust me, the business will roll by itself.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Exactly. And it's, I can see your smile and your reaction to that. Clearly, out of everything, like this little, I guess, element is the area that you love, you know, you really are passionate about and love doing the most. And I think you look at it as like, this is a, okay, we have an organization. This is a jigsaw puzzle. To make this thing work perfectly, I need something of this, something of that. And you love putting that and bringing it all together into like one cohesive team and unit and, you know, building that on. You mentioned something about when I was doing my research about that, the feeling you had when you transitioned to an entrepreneur and that first client, when you got paid as that first client, because it really resonated with me, because I remember that feeling of when I got paid for, you know, the work that I do. And I'm like, even till today, I'm still like mind blown. I'm like, and it really hits home when I get paid, because I'm like, this is, there's nothing else here. There's no one, it's just me. Someone saw that value in me, and that's something that's very precious. But as you know, as an entrepreneur, you get that deal, woohoo, mabruk, okay, great, on to the next, because that's all you think about. You just, the next one, and the next one, and the next one, which is, I think sometimes, at least in my experience, it has made it hard to enjoy the wins, because I'm just always focusing on, you know, what's next. But for example, in my arena, or what would you, lead generation is probably one of the most challenging things for most organizations. Like you said, it's not about, if I send out one thing, one email, and I got one rejection, I'm going to feel terrible because I put 100% into this one thing and it didn't work. But when you reach out to like 50 and you get those two might be all you need, you know, to start building your business. So, and I've been in sales, and I've spoken to people on the podcast who've done sales about like, it's all a numbers game. But from your perspective, is it, because I don't think it's just a numbers game. I think it's, there's quantity, but you really need to have quality of who you're going after. So for lead, when it comes to lead generation, what advice typically do you give to organizations on how they should be thinking about building out that engine, you know, that's going to keep them running?
First of all, sales is not numbers. Sales is about relationships first. Mm. And that's why I always say build a quotation before a relationship. Okay, that's the best thing ever. To be able to sell a product, you have to sell yourself first as a trusted partner. And lead generation for me, and I included this in sales Middle East, I'm not there to do the work on behalf of the clients. I'm there to open their eyes on clients and partners who want to work with them, but maybe their salespeople did not see those opportunities somehow. But to answer your question, yes, I danced and celebrated my first payment and first invoice.
I'm sure, yeah, absolutely.
And it was somebody who believed in me, honestly, or two companies who believed in me. And I will always be grateful for them forever, because that was the spark.
Yeah.
And then things started to roll out. Believe it or not, Khaled, I mean, most of my contracts, I'm always happy of this, but the problem is I'm benchmarking on this, are usually signed within 1 week of submitting, because the client is in a hurry to bring you on board, work with you, and they see your value, rather than taking this to millions of approvers and everything. And some of them will take ages and, you know, they never come back to you. But also, when you are a startup, what you will struggle in is in payment collection.
Yeah.
You will face people who will delay your payment. People, I never faced, I faced only with one client who didn't pay me. And I'm going to get my money. I know how to get my money. Of course, through the legal part and proper part.
Absolutely.
But yeah. I was pissed off because that person, I trusted him a lot, and then he just disappeared. But the others, either they delay your payment, but you trust them that, you know what, in the end, there's justice and there's a judicial system here which protects you in this region. Okay, they're late, it's fine, but they will pay you in the end, although cash flow is super important for us as small businesses. And the third part is they pay you quickly. And I worked and I still work with many companies who chase me to issue the invoice to pay me. Man, I love these people.
Yeah.
I swear I can work for them for a million years with the least profit.
Yeah.
Because this is where they respect you as a partner.
Yeah.
All right. So when somebody chases me, Hussein, send us the invoice. We want to pay you. I'll put them on my head.
Yeah.
I hope everybody, you know, does this, because this really, it's an emotional thing, by the way, Khaled.
Yeah.
It is an emotional thing.
Absolutely.
They tell you, you did a great job. It's time for us to pay you.
Inshallah, I hope to one day get to that, you know, get to that stage where people are chasing to pay me. Now it's kind of the other way around. But in your example, so I've spoken about this a couple of times on the podcast, and I would love to hear your perspective on this. I've always wanted to start my own business, always. Since I was a kid, it's just in my mind something that I wanted to do. I fell into what I'm doing now kind of, you know, by accident. And I'm like, okay, I'm a solopreneur. And I thought naively that, oh, as a solopreneur, I don't have overhead. It's just my time. That, oh, it'll be so much easier to build this and, you know, to make it work. And last year was the first year doing this. And the lessons I learned, Yahsin, about payments and cash flow and structure and projections, I got the biggest reality check in the world, in the best way. And I've spoken to people on the podcast about this. I think there's a huge misconception about the entrepreneurship, and you talked about this at the beginning, is like nice, flashy, exciting. You do this, I can do this, whatever. Yeah. You can, but with it comes pressure, with it comes anxiety, with it comes, where's that next deal coming from? You have bills, you have overheads. So if someone wants to be an entrepreneur, what is the first question you would ask them to determine whether, okay, you should go ahead with this, or are you not ready for this?
I'll put myself in the seat of an investor.
Okay.
And tell them, show me how you make money.
Okay.
Simple. It's business.
Mm.
I mean, entrepreneurship is not just a magical dream. It's business. How you will make your money. If I don't get an answer, I say drop it. And by the way, many startups I sat with as a mentor, and they thanked me for dropping their idea. I told them, it's not going to work. I can bet that you will make no money from this and it will crash. 95 or 100% of them, I don't know. I cannot remember. Maybe a big chunk of them, they had that feeling and they wanted assurance from me that it's not going to work before pulling the plug and going into something else. It doesn't mean to throw their dream. No, go into a different industry. Go into a different thing that you can do better, because what you are proposing today as a new business doesn't have a market in the region.
Exactly, yeah.
So this is the number one question. Will it work or no? Mm. Again, if you are a millionaire, have a lot of money, want to spend, try anything you want.
Enjoy.
Do whatever you want. But if you are really depending on this as your bread and butter, think of it how you'll make money.
Yeah. And I think, you know, again, I love what you said, that we always try to overcomplicate things, but at the end of the day, it's business. Did you make more money than you lost? All right. You're doing great. And it just comes down to that. It's so simple. And I really love that, how you just brought it like that. I have just two more questions for you, a couple more questions for you, Hussein. So your dream once upon a time was to be a manager. And then the dream was to be CEO. You've done both. You've worked across multiple industries, 22 years. And mashallah, an incredibly successful career. And now you're on this beautiful brand new path. So what's the dream now?
The dream is to keep dreaming of what I was dreaming before about, Although I know that the problem with me is I have endless dreams.
I can tell for
sure. So I will leave this world with a lot of dreams pending. But no, really, I would like to be on a path whereby, again, I always mix between successful business and creating impact, be it based on people or on businesses. Mm. This is really my dream. Mm. And to be positioning myself as the right guy who can come into any business, do what's needed, and of course, in addition to this, to leave impact on the ground, in the society, so that you have a combination of wins here.
Yeah,
it's not
only
a personal win, it's a personal win, and of course, a generic win for everybody.
Yeah. And it's very clear, I think, in our entire conversation, Hussein, that it just keeps coming back to two things for you, which is what you just said, you know, like people and impact. That's what you're trying to do. You want to raise people up and you want to help them and make an impact in whatever they're doing, because that's the result of your impact on them. So it's like this whole self-serving cycle, which is a beautiful thing. And I realize in my life, there's no greater feeling than helping someone. That's why this is called Hope Helps. Hussein, for my last two questions, these are questions I ask all my guests. So first of all, looking back at your life or career, either personally or professionally, when I ask you the question, what are you most proud of for yourself? What would you say?
That I was able to believe in myself and embraced the can-do mindset, which allowed me to hit a couple of milestones I had in mind.
And that can-do mindset that you talk about, was that instilled through your parents? Is that where that can-do mindset came from? How did this mindset get formed? Was it a couple of experiences growing up? Was it your family, your parents? I'm just curious where, because when I was listening to your TED Talk, I'm like, it's almost like, Hussein was born, like literally the second he was born, can-do mindset was like default already, you know, ready, plugged in. It's just give him some time and he'll get there.
My answer is a bit spiritual.
Please.
Of course, like parents, friends, and everybody in family.
Of course.
The acceptance of people.
The acceptance of people.
Which we call in Arabic, قبول الناس, أو محبة الناس. Everything I wanted to do, I felt that people were with me on that. They supported me on that. It's not being liked by people. It's being accepted by people. So in every milestone, every step in my career and in my life, the more I see people around me coming positively, embracing what I do, supporting what I do, this gave me more power. This gave me, because anything you need to do is related to the people around you. Be it an approval, be it a rejection, be it a promotion, be it a hiring. It is a human being who will take that decision. So the more you see people accepting you, the more you will have that can-do mindset getting more sparked in your brain to keep you moving forward.
Yeah.
If you are, and this depends again and goes back always to your attitude and character and how you behave and how you treat people. Because if you are really that person who people don't want to interact with, that toxic person, that negative person, you will lose it all. You will not have the acceptance 100%. Of people. People will avoid you. And this is where you will fail. By the way, you may not fail. You may end up being a millionaire to work in a specific organization that likes such people. But you know where's the trick? When you retire or you resign or you get fired and you lose all this, nobody is going to look at you when you are at the other part.
Exactly, exactly. And someone said this to me. I really love that, because someone said this to me recently on the podcast. They're like, Khaled, the world is a lot smaller than you think. Exactly. So be nice to people. And that's kind of echoing, you know, what you're talking about, because like you said, at the end of the day, whether to improve or whether to be fired or rejected or accepted, it's going to come down to a human being. So put yourself in a position that you can be accepted by people, like what you said, because that will give you the best chance, not only for success in from a career perspective, but also in your relationships from a personal perspective, building, you know, those relationships with people. Hussein, for my last question, what is the message you'd like everyone to take home with them today?
The message is, take away from this podcast everything we said, because whatever we discussed today is literally practical. It happened, and it's part of any person's journey. But the difference is some people speak about it and some people not. My purpose of being with you today in this podcast is to try to support anybody who wants really to keep moving forward in a positive mindset with all the energy and passion. And the examples that I gave you about me, maybe they are limited to me, but trust me, whatever you heard from me today applies for millions of people.
Absolutely.
But those people don't have a great platform like you to echo that, to motivate others, and to really give the positive hope for everybody that, yes, the world is super small, but also it has a lot of opportunities around you. You just need to find them.
Oh, man. That's such a beautiful way to end the show. And like you said, there's, you know, opportunities there. You just have to kind of, you know, go out and grab it. And sometimes you might need a little bit of luck, but that's okay. Hussein, man, this has been, and I love what you said, that everything we discussed today, you know, I love about it is that it's timeless. Everything we discussed about being a person, being a leader, growing a business, whatever, this, what we're talking about now is going to be relevant today, was relevant 50 years ago, and it'll be relevant in another 50 years. Hussein, I want to thank you so much, first of all, for coming on the show today, man. I really, really appreciate it. As I told you, I've been following your content for a while. So when I saw the chance, you know, to like reach out and have you on the show, I was like, there's no way I'm not taking it, because he's been so helpful to me. So I'd love to sit down and help get more value out of him to deliver to a lot, you know, to a new audience and to more people, because I think everything you're talking about can help so many people. And I really appreciate the content that you put out, that you're trying to be positive and trying to make an impact in the world. So there's not much more I can, you know, say about that, man, besides, you know, thank you. Thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you, Khaled. And I promise you one promise. You will not receive an invoice, advisory invoice for this one.
Habibi. Hussein, if people want to reach out with you, work with you, connect with you, what's the best way to get in touch?
I'm there on LinkedIn.
LinkedIn?
I have a challenge in catching up with all the messages. But I always tell people, whenever you want to send messages on LinkedIn, make sure that, you know, it's a win-win value for you and the others, so that at least it can be captured. But I'm always there on LinkedIn, and people can reach me out.
You guys heard it here, guys. If you want to connect with Hussein, make sure to reach out to him on LinkedIn. Super active. Don't worry, you'll find him. If not, he'll pop up on your page. Hussein, I want to say thank you so much again for coming on the show, man. Guys, to everyone listening, please make sure to like, share, follow, and subscribe to the podcast at Hope It Helps Pod and on all other channels. And as always, guys, hope it helps. Peace.
Great one.
Yes, sir.
Great questions, by the way.